Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week to bring in our man, Teron Davenport. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in TD, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and Talking with TD. Teron, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on? I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We are doing well. Hope you and yours are hanging in there during this time. Hope you have a Merry Christmas in case we don't get to talk to you between now and next week. And TD, I've had to listen to Joe Rexrode all week. Just, I mean, the slander he's had for Chase Daniel and this Detroit Lions offense has just been unbearable at times. If it is Chase Daniel on Sunday for the Titans and that's the matchup defensively, how big of an opportunity is that for this team? And what do you make of this Lions offense coming in there? How big of a drop-off is it between Matt Stafford and Chase Daniel, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a major drop-off because first things first, there's a huge difference between Chase Daniel and the other quarterback, Matt Stafford. Stafford can push the ball down the field. He can throw it to pretty much anywhere. You're not getting that with Chase Daniel. He's more of a guy that has to throw in anticipation. There's a lot more limitations on the playbook with Chase Daniel than there are with Stafford in there. So it's a huge difference. And when you look at that Lions offense, even with Stafford in there, they haven't exactly been the most productive offense. And I think, you know, it's a good opportunity for that Titans defense to continue to do well on third downs and in the red zone like they had in the games that they had won. So I think it's a great chance for them to try to get back on course and just get some momentum going into the playoffs.
So what you're saying, TD, is that the opponent may again actually hurt Derrick Henry because this game could get out of hand. I'm envisioning, you know, another game where Derrick Henry could have ridiculous numbers, and he still had them last week, but they could have been more ridiculous. But the game got out of hand, and you know, you're going to make the choice to sit him and keep him healthy in the fourth quarter. Are you seeing the same thing possibly in this game?
Yeah, I could see it I could see it going that way. And you look, the Lions, they're allowing, I think it's around 4.4 yards per carry. So that's a good opportunity for Derrick Henry to get some early success and, you know, put up a good amount of yards, and then he would get some plays off, you know, but it's not exactly what you want right now, right? You want him to get at least, he has to average 156 yards per game over these last three games. This is one of those games where you want him to be able to load up on the yards. I think the main thing is if they could get long runs out of him early, then you could go ahead and have that total and then still have the carries managed the way that it seems like they want to do it.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and Talking with TD, Teron Davenport, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And TD, we've talked a lot this week about Malcolm Butler and the season that he's had, and Joe has even advocated that he deserves some consideration for the Pro Bowl. What have you made of Malcolm Butler and the way that he's played this season? Even though he's been on a defense that hasn't been very good, it seems like to us anyway, he individually is having one heck of a year for the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, he's been the bright spot on that defense, and they have him traveling with the opposing team's top receiver, and he's holding his own. I mean, you look at the matchups against Chark, 2 receptions, 16 yards, and I don't even think one – I think it was actually 1 reception for 9 yards that he had against Butler. right? And you look at what he did to Chase Claypool. Allen Robinson was a solid matchup. AJ Green, you know, he's really held his own when they needed him to go against the top receiver. So I absolutely think that he should be in Pro Bowl contention. And even with tackling, that guy is a tone setter as a tackler as well. So, yeah, absolutely a Pro Bowl level player. And it is good to see that from him after, you know, seeing how things went up and down. But it seems to have smoothed out, and he's in the groove.
TD, we've talked about, you know, pass rush all year, but like this week in particular, I mean, the Titans right now sit last in the league. They've got 14, which is just, you know, just a putrid number at this point in an NFL season. And, you know, they had 43 last year with largely, you know, like I think 11th in the league, 12th in the league, largely the same sort of issue. It's that, you know, they didn't get a lot of four-man pass rush, but obviously they found ways to get quarterbacks to the ground. Is there, in your mind, is there any hope for this to get better? And is it basically come down to, you know, the defensive coaching staff? I mean, we all know Dean Pease isn't coming through the door, but doing a better job of scheming pressure moving forward here?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of everything. I don't see it getting to that level that it was last year. It's hard to imagine this, and it works. You know what I mean? So really what it's about is they have to get back to their creative ways of getting pressure. And I think that's where they miss Logan Ryan. But, I mean, you have guys that you can blitz, and Desmond King and Kenny Vaccaro. But it just goes back, in my opinion, to trusting those guys on the outside to be able to hold it down while they're not having help over top, right? And that's typically what happens when you blitz. So I think that's where the issue has been. Jeffrey Simmons has pretty much held it down in the middle, but, you know, they just got finished too. And that's the thing. They just have struggled to finish the job. And it's been tough. You know, Jack Crawford has come in and helped too, but it just, they don't have that guy that just will just take over a game. And they tried to get it, right? But it just didn't work out with their two additions before the season, you know. And it's one of those things where I can't see it getting better to the point where you say, okay, now that's a legitimate pass rush. I can't see that happening this year. So, you know what they're going to have to do in the draft and probably free agency. They're going to have to load up at that position.
Teron Davenport on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And TD, I mean, we saw an incredible catch from A.J. Brown last weekend. He follows it up on the next drive and drops kind of a gimme pass from Ryan Tannehill on a third down. Had a great game outside of that. But the drops have become a little bit more frequent for A.J. Brown in the last few weeks. As you evaluate A.J. Brown and maybe the slump he's going through right now from a drop standpoint, what would your concern level be? Is it high? Is it something that you think just passes here in the next few weeks and it's just not a big deal? Where would you put that in terms of how concerned you are with A.J. Brown and drops?
Yeah, I think it's something that passes, and that's not something that I would be overly concerned with. And this is what you get, though. When you have a guy that is so predicated on getting yards after the catch, sometimes he's going to turn up field without the ball in his hands. And that's more or less what you had. That drop that you mentioned, you know, that one, he said it himself that he felt the corner coming down and he was trying to make that catch and turn up field and make a move to get the yards afterwards.
Yep.
So it's something that you're going to have, but I don't think it's a major issue. And I think it's something that will be minimized, and it just, you gotta take the good with the bad, you know, because when he does catch the football, turn it upfield, we've seen what happens. So it balances out.
So, TD, you've got three games for each of these teams, Colts and Titans, 9-4 apiece. The middle game for each is the, you know, the quote-unquote tough one, Colts at Steelers,
yeah.
Titans at Packers and Lambeau. Who do you give the edge to right now in this division?
I would have to give it to the Titans. I'll be honest. I think they both lose next week. And that works well for the Titans, because if they both lose, the Titans are losing to an NFC team.
Yeah.
The Colts are losing to an AFC team. So that just further pads the cushion that they have. So I think it is, advantage Titans.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD and Talking with TD, Teron Davenport, has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. TD, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
Absolutely. You as well. And, look, I mean, Joe, you hear TD talk about it. He thinks both teams could lose next week to the Packers for the Titans and to the Steelers for the Colts. I think a lot of people this week are, like, riding the Steelers off, and I get it. Like, it's bad to watch the last couple of weeks, especially with that offense. I'm not, like, totally abandoning hope on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I still think they have enough tools there to figure things out to be a dangerous team heading down the stretch. But I do get it. I mean, you watch them play against Buffalo the other night, and it was bad. So I think a lot of people in their minds, the Steelers are just kind of in the back of the mind right now, and they've turned the page on them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they still have some good football ahead of them. And I totally agree. That's how I see it playing out too. And that, of course, would end up, as long as they don't, neither of them stumble with the games they should win, it would end up 11-5 Titans AFC South champ.
Make sure you're tuning in for week 15 of your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks. It's now open. Make your picks of the three college or pro football underdogs that you think will win before the college football games begin tomorrow. This week, the weekly winner will receive a 10-roof gift card. Just hit up thegamenashville.com or the ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app to sign up and make your picks today. When we come back, Joe Rexrode will explain his hatred of the Detroit Lions. You don't want to miss that. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans coach Mike Vrabel meeting with the media today at 12:35. You'll be able to hear that on Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And our live press conferences on ESPN 102.5 The Game are sponsored by Dunkin', featuring their new location on Harding Pike in Bellmead. So make sure that you're tuning in for that. Joe Rexrode, it's a special week here on the show. It's Detroit Lions week for the Titans. That doesn't happen very often. Not very many matchups between the Titans and the Lions. I think the last time the Lions were here was the Jake Locker special. It was just a bullet he fired. Nate Washington catches it over the back of the defender, takes off running towards the end zone. It's a touchdown. It's a great game here in Nashville. Maybe we'll have another great game on Sunday. But, Joe, the Detroit Lions at one time held a special place in your heart. They don't anymore. You spent a lot of time in your life watching some Detroit Lions football and have developed an interesting relationship with them. How would you describe your relationship right now with the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, see, maybe hatred is strong. And you understand, like, I have pure love, and really I have pure sympathy for Lions fans. Again, I have them in my family. I try to help them. I've tried to talk them to – I've tried to get them where I am. Really, my relationship is I like to point and laugh at the Lions. And it's such a better place to be.
It's also a very easy place to be. Very easy place. It's a very easy place to be.
Very easy, exactly. Oh, yes. Very easy. And, you know, people could say, oh, so you took the easy way out. But honestly, like, if you understand what this franchise has done for more than a half century, I think you should have sympathy for that decision. You know, it's a better way to live. So, again, like, there's no, you know, Sunday, you know, it's not like I like hate watch the Lions and want them to, I find them amusing. They amuse me. They're like a clown to me. Okay. But there were some childhood, I've told the story before. I'll tell it quickly again. My birthday at my grandparents' house, the Lions were in the playoffs against the 49ers, Joe Montana, Billy Sims was the Lions star. Gary Danielson threw five freaking interceptions that day. And still the Lions, were in position to win with a 43-yard Eddie Murray field goal, and he pushed it. He looked just like Gostkowski in some of these push field goals. And I threw myself onto the floor, and my grandparents had folding chairs for, you know, my New Year's Eve is my birthday.
Yes.
So this was New Year's Eve, okay, of 83. And I threw myself and I knocked over all the folding chairs and it made this huge crashing sound. And I was like crying. And it was just this huge, like, just, I mean, embarrassing moment for me in my life, a complete spectacle because of the Lions. But a year earlier, I want to give you a Thanksgiving at my uncle's house, 1982.
Uh-oh.
Very, very nice Thanksgiving. The Lions, of course, play every Thanksgiving. Very excited about the Lions, of course, and Billy Sims. He was one of my childhood hero athletes. I don't remember how bad this game was, but this game was Lions 7, Giants 6 with like a minute left, okay? So the whole nation, yeah, the whole nation has to watch this Lions game, and this is like the Giants in the early days of LT, you know, and they had, you know, they were kind of coming on. I think Parcells was there at that point. But, you know, it was just this. So the Lions have the ball at, like, the Giants 5 with less than a minute to go. So the worst-case scenario is, like, they don't score. They kick a field goal to go up 10-6, and the Giants have to drive the length of the field down 4, right? Worst case. Gary freaking Danielson, okay? And he's definitely, like, you know, he's part of this whole story. He throws a little flat pass that LT picks off and runs back, like, 95 yards for the winning touchdown. Like, you couldn't possibly have a dumber play, you know, as a quarterback. So there's another one that sticks out. You would not remember this because I guess you were a year old, Robbie, but you probably know of it. The Lions beat the Packers to win the division in 93.
Yes.
And the Packers then have to come back to the Silver Dome. The whole state is just the excitement. We were all gathering for this massive playoff game. Lions are taking it to the Packers again, and then they just let Sterling Sharp run all by himself into the end zone so that Brett Favre could just, like, basically arm punt a ball straight up in the air, and he just waits for it to come down to him. Like, just devastating. But, you know, a lot of it is just the fact that Barry Sanders should be the all-time rushing leader, the unquestioned number one back of all time, and they're so bad that – that he retired early. You got Marty Morningweg taking the wind in overtime, yeah, against the Bears, yeah, rather than the ball. You got Dan Orlovsky. Like, Dan Orlovsky's brilliant. We know he's brilliant,
friend,
right?
Of the show.
The guy all of a sudden thinks he has an 18-yard end zone because he was on the Lions, because these people get lionized. And so this is why at some point you have to laugh at it, and I do. But now that I'm revisiting some of these moments, I'm kind of getting upset again.
Well, let me ask you this: like, if as you're watching these SEC games of the week on CBS and you see Gary Danielson on the television, I mean, like, do you get angry? Do memories come flooding back in your head of young Joe Rexroad and how upset you were watching Gary Danielson play for the Lions?
I don't get angry, but I do shake my head. I never liked him. I never liked him. So it was always the argument of Eric Hipple or Gary Danielson. Eric Hipple came out Monday Night Football against the Bears and, like, lit it up. And from then on, I was like, that is the quarterback. Now, really, Danielson probably was a little bit better player, but just because he would have these moments where it's like, how could you possibly throw that pass? I never liked Gary Danielson. I never wanted him to be the quarterback. Now, then, of course, here's another one. The Lions in 19 – we've talked about the Heisman race, Bo Jackson, Chuck Long, right? An incredible race. And Chuck Long was absolutely unbelievable at Iowa. And as a quarterback, Lions draft him. I don't remember if he was number one overall, but he was very high in the draft. And I believe Chuck Long could have been a great player in this league. Now, he got hurt, but I still believe he was lionized. I'm not totally convinced that Joey Harrington couldn't have been a good quarterback someone else. I'm not totally convinced of it. He got lionized. There's a lot of coaches. You know, Jim Caldwell got lionized.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, man, poor Rod Marinelli goes 0-16. Poor guy. Maybe he wasn't head coaching material. But, again, that's part of it, too. I mean, really what this is about is bad ownership. And bad ownership, bad decisions from the top, mismanagement of the team, bad choices to run and coach your team over and over and over again.
Well, I feel like Sunday is a big moment for you and your family, Joe. Like, you've talked about your son, and he loves the Lions, and you've tried with all of your might to get this out of him and try to I guess, really protect him for the heartbreak that he's going to have to experience time and time again in the future if he remains on this path. I feel like Sunday's a big opportunity. Like, if the Titans go out on Sunday and they just shove it to the Detroit Lions, like we all think they very well could in this game, maybe this could be a turning point in your family. You move completely away from the Lions, all of you, and embrace your new surroundings. What do we think?
Well, nah, man, because it's a nice thought. It's a nice thought. But all it's going to be is, well, Stafford didn't play. If Stafford would have played, I'm trying to think of some of his terms. He uses the term cap. That's cap.
Is that a new thing?
Know, toxic.
Is that the lingo nowadays? Yeah. That's cap.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. Or like if you're saying if you're being honest, no cap. Like, and actually Dan Orlovsky uses this lingo too, so yeah. He's pretty young and hip. But no, he will say that they would have torched them with Stafford, you know, or oh, this is just good, better draft pick, fine. I don't know what to do, man.
It's a sick place.
I don't
to
have
be.
Any answers.
So what you're saying is there's no room for football baptism here.
No.
Oh man.
You know, I mean, I've taken him and his little sister to Titans training camp for days when I was covering him. I said, go sit in the stands. Like they went and waited for autographs. They've gone to games. You know, and I think for him the Titans are a good number two. But yeah, he should just embrace the Titans, go that way, or anybody else. Root for the Browns.
Yeah, become an Arizona Cardinals fan. They're a good team.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, or the Bears.
Like you don't well, that would you know.
Well.
The only thing that I retained from my lost youth of being a Lions fan is that I still hate the Bears and the Packers. So
that's not nice.
You know, I may not totally support that decision, but for the most part, yeah, anywhere else. But why not? You're in Nashville. You have a franchise that actually is run correctly, that has a chance to do things, that has won a playoff game. In fact, won two playoff games last year, which is double what you've done in 70 years. So maybe root for that franchise.
Do they really only have one playoff win in 70 years?
Well, 70 may be a little bit of an exaggeration, but what the heck? They deserve this exaggeration. It's one. So 1991, like I said, was the win, and it was a glorious 38-6 trouncing of Troy Aikman, who still can't pronounce Mariota's name, by the
Apparently
way,
not.
And the Cowboys. I think their last playoff win before that, I think it was 1957, right? I believe so. So do the math on that. That's 63 years. Yeah, yeah. So one in 63 years.
Do you know how hard that is to accomplish?
It's incredible.
Oh my God.
There have been as many presidential assassinations as there have been Lions wins, playoff wins.
Yeah.
Since that time. So
well done.
Yeah. That's
an advanced stat for you.
Yeah, it is.
That is an advanced stat. My goodness.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caleb texted in and asked, are we still going to get the Lions song for Joe to sing today? I don't know, Joe. That's up to you. Are you going to sing the Lions fight song today?
A mighty team that will not yield.
That's the great thing. We've got it. I can't do better than that.
No, that was pretty good. That's pretty good.
And those are the only words I know, and those aren't even the words of the song.
I know. You just made them up. That was awesome. That's the best part about the whole thing. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan in Nashville texts in and says, Joe, which quarterback do you hate more, Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, easily Favre. Oh, not even close. Favre is I hate that dude. Rodgers is hard to hate, you know? He's so good and, like, whatever. I mean, he may be a little arrogant, but, you know, he's fine. Favre, oh, God, what a jackass. I mean, don't even get me started on Brett Favre. And also, and this is why you really hate someone, because they're so good, too, right?
He's pretty good.
It's like – And Favre is a guy, too. Like, he would throw – like, sometimes you'd beat him. He would throw, like, awful picks, you know. He'd have these games where it's like, what are you doing? But then he'll just get you with the, you know, the 80-yarder, or he'll wear you out. I mean, he was a great player. But, yeah, that's not even close. Favre is in a pretty – like, he's like an A.J. Pierzynski category for me as far as, like, hated opposing athletes. And for anybody who doesn't remember A.J. Pierzynski, man.
Yeah, he's got to be near the top. When we come back, Joe and I will lay it out there for Titans fans why there should be something you could learn from the ineptitude of the Lions. We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. TD from Nashville texts in and says, I remember growing up and family members in Detroit selling their front yard out for parking and their tickets instead of actually going to the game. Was this a common occurrence, Joe? Did people sell their front yard out for tickets instead of having to go watch the Lions play?
Smart. So is that, would that have been in Pontiac then, Silverdome? Probably.
My guess, yes. Sure.
Well, you see that in towns near football stadiums, and those are the smart ones, especially when their team sucks.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe's friend Bud texts in and says, the Lions are the only non-expansion team to never play in a Super Bowl. That's a heck of a stat.
That's a great point. I've never heard it stated that way, but that's a great point. Now, that's right, because obviously the Browns franchise is the Ravens, so that's true. My initial instinct is, what about the Browns? But they're not the actual Browns. These Browns are an expansion team.
Exactly.
There you go. More rarefied air, Detroit Lions.
Restore the roar, baby. Come on. Let's go. So, Joe, you laid it out there in the last segment. I mean, it has been a tough, basically, century for the Lions in their existence in the NFL. And you shift that to the Titans' point of view, and I get it. Like, from 2009 until basically last season, when Tannehill took over as quarterback, it was a pretty rough time to be a Titans fan. There was a lot of bad football. There were a lot of really tough-on-the-eyes games to watch. A lot of these just slugfests between two awful teams that were just terrible to watch. And then finally, you come in, you got a great run at the end of last year. Ryan Tannehill takes over as quarterback, and this team is winning and winning consistently. And now that they sit here this year, 9-4, first place in the AFC South. And what I take away from what you laid out there in the last segment, Joe, is that if you're a Titans fan and you've been here for a long time and you've watched this team and you've seen it through the good times, then through the down times, and now hopefully back in good times for the Titans' sake, maybe the Lions fandom and everything that franchise has been through offers a little perspective on this Friday heading into the matchup on Sunday against what could be another lowly Detroit team walking through the door.
Well, yeah, it should. I mean, look, there are very few fan bases in the NFL who are just always happy. I mean, I'm sure Patriots fans are complaining right now, like, oh, Cam, what are we doing, Bill? You know, and it's like, well, gosh, you can't be great every year. You know, I mean, their run is extraordinary. You know, it's basically, you know, it's in the same level of extraordinary on the good side as the Lions. It's not that level, because the Lions' bad run is just incredible. But point being, that's a rarity. There are ups and downs in this league. Most franchises are cyclical and have their shot at doing some special things. You mentioned 2009, but I mean, I would hope Titans fans have felt a lot better from 16 on. Even if the Mariota era was frustrating up and down, you're still talking about a team that, you know, has won playoff games here, has gotten to the playoffs, has been solid and provided hope. I mean, yeah, last year takes it to a new level. You get to the AFC Championship game in that run. But the bottom line is Titans fans should feel like their organization is run by people with a clue. And if that's the case, understand that there are plenty that don't have that. I mean, even it's not like the Cowboys haven't had success. They've had a lot of success, but like that circus and all of the overreaction that has gone on there from the top, for example, you could compare Amy Adams Strunk, admittedly a short period of time, but compare what she's done on various fronts, and I think she compares favorably with a lot of owners in this league.
I would agree. And as you sit here and talk about the Lions and you laid it out that way and like how consistently bad they've been for the last 60 years, like I'm trying to think if there are other franchises in pro sports that really even compare. Like for a long time, the Browns have been that way, but like I would even put the Lions below the Browns in terms of just like consistent ineptitude. Like are there other franchises around the world of sports that you think of that are even in the same ballpark as the Lions in terms of ineptitude consistently for that long of a stretch of time?
Well, So here's the thing. So, for example, you've got – I mean, I think of obviously like Daniel Snyder, okay?
Sure.
I mean, to me, that is – and which is crazy because obviously like they are a great story this year. But that's an owner who not only is incompetent, and I mean incredibly incompetent, with if you look at what he has done to his coaches, GMs, and to the roster, all the – I mean, he has meddled and almost always wrong when he meddles, and then he's a scumbag.
Right.
So you know, so you take him to a different level of that. But like you said, you know, that's also a franchise that before him, and it wasn't that long, it's in the memory of a lot of people, was a model franchise. So at least they had that. So if you think about it in terms of – I will say – I know a lot of, you know, having lived in Virginia for a pretty good chunk of my life, I know a lot of fans of that franchise who aren't anymore because of, and again, it's not because him being a scumbag as much as it's just him just running it into the ground. So there have been worse owners. I mean, James Dolan of the Knicks, my goodness,
yeah.
Right? But as far as just the long term, different members of a family, I mean, you could look at the Titans to the Adams family and say, well, in that in between period, right, between Bud and Amy, they had some struggles, right? So sometimes you hand something off within a family and it gets way better or worse based on that exchange. The crazy thing for the Lions is like it doesn't seem to matter. All of them, like just sell it, you know, like they can't figure it out. I mean, with the Titans, they found someone who gets it and has taken charge and, you know, wants to take this thing to a new place. By the way, I don't know, we've talked about this week, but, you know, of course they had the, now it's, they've split the team 50-50 now, you know, when it to, and that was Teresa Walker with the breaking story there, yep, with the Associated Press. But that's, you know, that's a just another sign of, you know, Amy Adams Strunk's commitment. So, again, with, if you're a Titans fan, I mean, it's cyclical, and no one is always happy with their team in this league, but you should feel pretty good about where your franchise is from the top down.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says the Washington Generals are on par with the Lions. It's probably a good comparison.
Yeah, at least the Washington Generals know what they're supposed to do. Like, they don't ever have illusions about winning, you know?
Yes.
They execute the game plan.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, the game plan is executed to a T each and every time by the Washington Generals. So, Joe, right, the way you've been talking this week, like, I don't think you even see a path to victory for the Lions in this game. And we'll get to Pigskin Pick'em around 9:30, and we'll get to the line and all that. But it sounds like you've never been more confident in a Titans win coming up on Sunday in your entire life.
Well, now understand, now if Matthew Stafford were playing, I would not feel that way. I think Matthew Stafford is good enough to, and you know, that's what the Lions are too. I mean, they're the team that goes out and randomly wins two or three games they shouldn't win, and then they lose four or five they shouldn't lose, or they're just bad,
right,
you know, and they rise up. But no, if Stafford were on the field, I think the Lions absolutely would have a chance. He masks so much bad and has for so long for them, because again, he is criminally underrated in this league for his talent, and I think for his toughness too. I mean, he's all around. Here and there, he'll throw a head scratching pick, but he's a really talented player. You take him off the field, and they are just a really bad football team. There's no excuse. There's no excuse for the Titans to be in a close game Sunday if Chase Daniel is the quarterback. I absolutely stand by that. And again, if you somehow Matthew Stafford, we find out today he made a miraculous return to practice and he's going to play, even if he has a cracked rib, he's going to play. I'd totally have a pause there because he's good enough against this defense to cause trouble.
But that's why I keep going back. Like, I get it. It's Chase Daniel, and I've joked about it all week, but he's not good. And we all know that. He's not a good quarterback. The Titans should be able to be fine if Chase Daniel's there, even on a defense that struggles as much as they have. But like, what happens if the Lions come in and they're able to move the ball, even if Chase Daniel is the quarterback? Like, how much confidence do you lose in this Titans team if Chase Daniel comes in here? And I'm not saying they come in and win the game, but they're able to be effective on offense.
Well, I don't know how high the confidence is anyway with that defense, but it would be another I don't know if it would quite be like 38-7 at the half, you know, against, even though that was against a good offense. But yeah, that would not be good. You know, I mean, I think the Titans last week handled a bad quarterback, but also they handled a pretty good running game and running back and some pretty good receivers. And the thing is, the Lions, you know, the Lions, I mean, Marvin Jones is pretty good. You know, Hockenson's a pretty good tight end. No, Dan, I mean, they have good backs, but their offensive line is not, let's not forget that Frank Ragnow has a fractured throat.
Yeah.
That was pretty great. That was a pretty great Vrabel answer yesterday, by the way, you know, to Buck's question. Yeah, I never broke my throat there, Buck. But, I mean, you take him out of the game. You take him and Stafford out of the game. I mean, he's a really good player. It's just, it would be very disappointing if the Lions move up and down the field as they are assembled right now.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rick texts in and says, Rex Road is bringing the heat today, and the Lions have stoked the fire. Also, I'm putting $10 on all of Porst picks this week. That's what I do. I ride with hot teams and ride with hot people. Maybe not a bad strategy there from Rick.
Nice. A lot of fire in that, Rick. A lot of fire in that. A lot of heat in that message from Rick.
That was good. Yeah. I liked it.
I've tried to keep it calm with the Lions. You know, it's like at some point you have to laugh at things in life, and they are one of those things.
When we come back, we'll get into the big battle last night between Marcus Mariota and the Las Vegas Raiders and Justin Herbert and the L.A. Chargers. Battle of Oregon quarterbacks last night, Joe. Maybe I'll apologize to Marcus Mariota. Find out on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back in Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I have to be honest, I was not overly excited about this game last night between the Chargers and the Raiders. The Raiders, ever since you started picking them in Pigskin Pick'em, they've really taken a downturn. And if not for a zero blitz against the Jets, would have just been atrocious in the last few weeks. So I wasn't overly thrilled about it. But then I look around on Twitter, and Mariota's in the game. Derek Carr's gone out with a groin injury. Mariota's in the game. So I figure, you know what? What the heck? Let's flip this thing over. Let's see what Marcus can do. And he comes out. He throws an absolute dime to Waller down the sideline for a touchdown. And I'm thinking, oh, man, look at here. The Las Vegas Raiders version of Marcus Mariota. He's just out there slinging this thing around. And Marcus finishes 17 of 28, 226 yards. One touchdown, one interception, puts another 88 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Now, the Raiders lose. The Chargers win in overtime 30-27. But Mariota, back on the field, he was okay last night. He played pretty well in spurts for the Raiders last night. Is that good enough? Is that me giving him compliments right there?
Well, I mean, I think he was better than okay. The pick was bad. You know, he threw a pick and Yeah, they couldn't finish with the touchdown to win it in overtime, but I thought he looked pretty good. You know, I thought at times, like you said, the Waller dime, but running the ball, you know, when he was here, obviously he's the franchise quarterback. He's the guy you got to preserve. He had tons of injuries, even with that approach. But you see last night, you turn that guy loose as a runner, and he is you could see him, and you look at like what Lamar Jackson does with the Ravens. And I'm not saying the Titans should have like gone to that here, but like I would like to see Marcus Mariota in something like that. The problem is, again, they had him in bubble wrap here. I mean, I swear he slid more than a pro baseball player, and he still had all those injuries. That's really that's the story of his career, and it probably will be. But watching him last night, you still see the talent. I was probably down the middle on Mariota here, and I was probably a little bit shaded toward him even. I mean, I remember writing a column after Denver saying they should get one more chance. That was largely because I had no idea, obviously, that Tannehill was going to do what he's going to do. And I was like, look, we know what Tannehill is from Miami, and he's better than what Mariota is now, but are you sure you want to give up on him? Well, it turned out to be the right decision, obviously. But, man, I swear, as the years go by, especially with people like you leading the charge – Like, we are going to be to the point where Mariota was one of the worst quarterbacks in the history of football, and it just wasn't so. He was pretty good. At times, he was really good. He wasn't consistent enough, but the biggest problem with Marcus Mariota is that he couldn't stay healthy.
I don't know if I buy
– there's my rant.
I don't know if I buy pretty good. He was okay. He was okay. I don't – there was a 1 year where he was pretty good. Outside of that, he was a very average quarterback.
Well, okay. So 2016, he was very good. I mean, the numbers, he was very good. He took a team that was 2-14 the year before. They went 9-7. He breaks his leg it was a bad game before he broke his leg at Jacksonville, but he was very good that year. At times, like, this guy is going to be a star good.
Yeah.
The next year, he was so. I agree. Like, he wasn't great. Now, he also had, I think, 5 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. They had a lot of kind of sludgy offensive games that he would still save at the end in clutch play after clutch play.
Right, in large part because he screwed it up before that. But, yes, I hear you.
Well, okay. He screwed it up, or was their offense mundane? I mean, sometimes it was him. Sometimes he missed passes or whatever. But I would argue that the whole operation was not great, and that's why the Titans ended up moving on from Terry Rubisky and Mike Mularkey. He also was great in that playoff game in the second half. I mean, yeah, he threw the TD to himself. Look at the rest of the half. I mean, he was big time. He and Derrick Henry lifted that team to a playoff win. So, look, I mean, you're right. He had 1 year where he was what I would call really good, and it went down from there. And I do think the Jacksonville injury is the primary place, and then you go to the beginning of the 2018 season, Vrabel's first game, and the nerve injury against the Dolphins, and it all adds up. And that may sound like making excuses for him. I don't think he was ever going to be – I don't think he was consistently accurate enough where you need to be great, but I still think he's got enough in him to maybe be somewhere and be an effective starting quarterback.
Maybe, like, I think people went a little overboard last night. I mean, not just locally, but more specifically, like, nationally. Like, you know, halfway through the game last night, you've got people talking about, well, why is Marcus Mariota not a starting quarterback in the league? And, like, to me last night, I mean, Mariota played well at times, but it was just kind of what he is for the most part. He has moments where you're like, wow, okay, that was pretty good. And then he has a moment, like, on the interception where the ball is 2 yards behind the receiver and it's a pick. At the worst time, like, it's, there's so much inconsistency with his accuracy, and that to me has always been like the weird part to figure out, because the throw to Waller, you could not have thrown a ball any better than he throws that ball. Just the range in which he is so either right on point or so wildly inaccurate to me has always been kind of the biggest thing that just mystifies me about that guy. And a lot of Titans fans felt the same way. Like, there were points in time last year where he couldn't complete like an 8-yard out route. Like, it was amazing to watch. And that's always been just amazing to me, how sometimes he looks like he could put the ball anywhere he wants to put it, and other times he can't get within 2 yards of a receiver.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he's not consistent enough with his accuracy. But I think the bigger problem last year is you really started to see, you know, the old saying, you start to see ghosts in the pocket. I mean, I really think he got very skittish in the pocket. It seemed like it got worse after the game at Jacksonville, where Calais Campbell just blasted him play after play. But he couldn't stand in there and make the plays last year. He was a broken player. And so from that perspective, I just thought last night he looked more like himself. Actually, he actually had a pretty good press conference after the game. I don't know if you saw it. He was pretty open about sort of the struggles, you know, the confidence struggles, things like that. Like, Mariota has so rarely said anything.
Yeah.
That was good to see. I just think it looks like maybe all the time away, heal up a little bit, be a little bit less worried about your body and go out there and play. That was fun to see. I agree that there are accuracy, you know, inconsistencies that are going to hold him back. But, man, if he could stay healthy and utilize that athleticism more in some kind of an offense, I mean, I'd sign up to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be great to see him get an opportunity.
Now, I will say this. Like, it was interesting last night on Twitter to watch, like, his former teammates here with the Titans be invested. Like Kevin Byard was tweeting about it. A.J. Brown was tweeting about it. Jeffrey Simmons was tweeting about it. A whole bunch of Titans players on Twitter last night were really pulling hard for Marcus Mariota. And I don't think, I mean, that's not a surprise to me. Like, it's no secret that Mariota was beloved in that locker room for the Titans. And, you know, every time I dealt with him, I'm sure, Joe, every time you dealt with him, I mean, Marcus Mariota, for, as a human being, one of the greatest athletes I've ever been around. Nice guy. I mean, he's always humble. And from that standpoint, like, I think sometimes people hear my criticism of Mariota and they think, well, you just hate the guy. No, like, I don't. I wanted him to be good. I just recognized, I think, earlier than some, that he wasn't. And he wasn't good, in my opinion. But if you told me now that he would go on to have a successful career in the NFL, I'd be all for it. I'm all for Marcus Mariota and the redemption story because I think he's that good of a guy. I hope he finds it.
Just be a Mari hater and embrace it, Robbie. I don't need your niceties. You hate the guy, Mari hater.
I hate the way he plays quarterback, yes.
That's fine. That was nice of you to say. He was a nice guy.
Thank you.
It was cool to see his players, his guys rally around him. I don't know that that happens like as much as it did last night for everybody who was a quarterback for a former team. But no, man, hey, the Titans are in a much better position at quarterback, and the name of the game is being efficient, throwing the ball to the open guy, and winning. So they're in a better spot. But from what some of the stuff we heard, even about Mariota in camp, you know, people who cover the team, like, why did they sign this guy? I was like, oh, we're never going to see this guy again, are we? So from that perspective, it was a nice surprise to see him and at least looking like a guy who can make plays again and have some fun playing football.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey texts in and says, Marcus was an average quarterback only because of the average coaches around him. I think you can make that argument in some cases throughout his career. But to me, that argument died last year when Marcus Mariota was the quarterback for this team the first few games, and then Ryan Tannehill took over. If you couldn't see the difference then, like, there's nothing I can do to help you at that point. That was not on the coaches. That was on the quarterback.
Right, and also, let's visit what his best year was. His best year was with Malarkey and Rubisky and a, you know, this whatever you, exotic smash mouth. But, I mean, a running offense that they were excellent play action. He was incredible in the red zone. The coaches didn't hold him back that year. So, yeah, that's somewhat like the whole, you know, we have seen Corey Davis get better. He's having his career year. He's gotten better. But some people want to say, he had Mariota before. He would have been a 1,200-yard receiver. No, he wouldn't have. He has gotten better. Derrick Henry, Jared still likes to say Matt LaFleur and whoever, they all screwed it up. Derrick Henry should have been getting 30 carries a game. No, he got better. He says it. He says it repeatedly. He had to get better. So let's not blame other people for these. People want to do that. Mariota had different coaches and had success and failure, and ultimately it's on him.
Got some breaking news in the NFL. This coming from Adam Schefter from ESPN. Drew Brees will be the Saints' starting quarterback on Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Saints believe he is fully healthy, and the doctors have cleared him to play. So that matchup between the Saints and the Chiefs, which you can hear here on ESPN 102.5, the game at 3:25, pregame at 2:45, just got a little bit more interesting, Joe, with Drew Brees versus Patrick Mahomes.
Man, I was excited. Now I'm really excited. And as an Alvin Kamara fantasy owner in the semifinals, I'm doubly excited.
I'm sure you are. When we come
back.
Are
you excited for my fantasy team?
I'm very excited for your fantasy team. I wish you nothing but success over the weekend. When we come back, we'll dive into the Vols. David Ubben from The Athletic will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.